caught. Ah, well, too bad. Look, attracted or not, you bit him when you were starving and dying, and you still held back. I didn't hold back with Maureen. Jordan had to pull me off. You would have. She took her finger and pressed it to his lips, then ran it down his throat, across his chest, coming to a stop where his heart had once beat. I trust you. Maybe you shouldn't. I'm a shadow hunter. I can fight you off if I have to. Jace didn't fight me off. Jace is in love with the idea of dying, said Isabel. I'm not. She slung her legs around his hips. She was amazingly flexible, and slid forward until she could brush her lips against his. He wanted to kiss her, wanted it so badly his whole body ached. He opened his mouth tentatively, touched his tongue to hers, and felt a sharp pain. His tongue had slid along the razor edge of his fang. He tasted his own blood and drew back abruptly, turning his face away from her. Isabel, I can't. He closed his eyes. She was warm and soft in his lap, teasing, torturous. His fangs ached painfully. His whole body felt like sharp wires were twisting through his veins. I don't want you to see me like this. Simon. Gently, she touched his cheek, turning his face toward her. This is who you are. His fangs had retracted, slowly, but they still ached. He hid his face in his hands and spoke between his fingers. You can't possibly want this. You can't possibly want me. My own mother threw me out of the house. I bit Maureen. She was only a kid. I mean, look at me. Look what I am, where I live, what I do. I'm nothing. Isabel stroked his hair lightly. He looked at her between his fingers. Up close, he could see that her eyes weren't black, but a very dark brown, flecked with gold. He was sure he could see pity in them. He didn't know what he expected her to say. Isabel used boys and threw them away. Isabel was beautiful and tough and perfect and didn't need anything. Least of all a vampire who wasn't even very good at being a vampire. He could feel her breathing. She smelled sweet. Blood, mortality, gardenias. You're not nothing, she said. Simon, please, let me see your face. Reluctantly, he lowered his hands. He could see her more clearly now. She looked soft and lovely in the moonlight, her skin pale and creamy, her hair like a black waterfall. She unlooped her hands from around his neck. Look at these, she said, touching the white scars of healed marks that snowflaked her silvery skin, on her throat, on her arms, on the curves of her breasts. Ugly, aren't they? Nothing about you is ugly, Izzy, said Simon, honestly shocked. Girls aren't supposed to be covered in scars, Isabel said matter-of-factly. But they don't bother you. They're part of you. No, of course they don't bother me. She touched his lips with her fingers. Being a vampire is part of you. I didn't ask you to come here last night because I couldn't think of anyone else to ask. I want to be with you, Simon. It scares the hell out of me, but I do. Her eyes shimmered. And before he could wonder for more than a moment whether it was with tears, he had leaned forward and kissed her. This time it wasn't awkward. This time she leaned into it, and he was suddenly under her, rolling her on top of him. Her long black hair fell down around them both like a curtain. She whispered to him softly as he ran his hands up her back. He could feel her scars under his fingertips, and he wanted to tell her he thought of them as ornaments. Testaments to her bravery that only made her more beautiful. But that would have meant stopping kissing her, and he didn't want to do that. She was moaning and moving in his arms, Her fingers were in his hair as the two of them rolled sideways, and now she was under him, and his arms were full of the softness and warmth of her, and his mouth with the taste of her, and the scent of her skin, salt and perfume and blood. He stiffened again, all over, and Isabel felt it. She caught hold of his shoulders. She was luminous in the darkness. "Go ahead," she whispered. He could feel her heart slamming against his chest. "I want you to." He closed his eyes, pressed his forehead to hers, tried to calm himself. His fangs were back, pushing into his lower lip, hard and painful. "No." Her long, perfect legs wrapped around him, her ankles locking, holding him to her. "I want you to." Her breasts flattened against his chest as she arched up against him, baring her throat. The scent of her blood was everywhere, all over him, filling the room. "Aren't you scared?" he whispered. "Yes, but I still want you to." "Isabel, I can't..." He bit her. His teeth slid, razor sharp, into the vein at her throat, like a knife slicing into the skin of an apple. Blood exploded into his mouth. It was like nothing he had experienced before. With Jace, he had been barely alive. With Maureen, the guilt had crushed him even as he had drunk from her. He had certainly never had the sense that either of the people he had bitten had liked it. But Isabel gasped, her eyes flying open and her body arcing up against him. She purred like a cat, stroking his hair, his back. Little urgent movement of her hand saying, "Don't stop, don't stop." He poured out of her, into him, lighting his body. He had never felt, imagined anything else like it. He could feel the strong, sure beat of her heat pounding through her veins into his, and for that moment it was as if he lived again, and his heart contracted with pure elation. He broke away. He wasn't sure how, but he broke away and rolled onto his back, his fingers digging hard into the mattress at his sides. He was still shuddering as his fangs retracted. The room shimmered all around him, the way things did in the few moments after he drank human, living blood. "Is he?" he whispered. He was afraid to look at her, afraid that now that his teeth were no longer in her throat, she would stare at him with revulsion and horror. "What? You didn't stop me," he said. It was a half-accusation, half-hope. "I didn't want to." He looked at her. She was on her back, her chest rising and falling fast, as if she'd been running. There were two neat puncture wounds in the side of her throat, and two thin lines of blood that ran down her neck to her collarbone. Obeying an instinct that seemed to run deep under the skin, Simon leaned forward and licked the blood from her throat, tasting salt, tasting Isabel. She shuddered, her fingers fluttering in his hair. "Simon." He drew back. She was looking at him with her big dark eyes, very serious, her cheeks flushed. "I..." "What?" For a wild moment, he thought she was going to say, "I love you." But instead, she shook her head, yawned, and hooked her finger through one of the belt loops on his jeans. Her fingers played with the bare skin at his waist. Somewhere, Simon had heard that yawning was a sign of blood loss. He panicked. "Are you okay? Did I drink too much? Do you feel tired? Are..." She scooted closer to him. "I am fine. You made yourself stop. And I'm a shadow hunter. We replace blood at triple the rate a normal human being does." "Did you..." He could barely bring himself to ask. "Did you like it?" "Yeah." Her voice was husky. "I liked it."
"Really?"
She giggled. "You couldn't tell?
I thought maybe you were faking it."
She raised herself up on one elbow and looked down at him with her glowing dark eyes. How could eyes be dark and bright at the same time? I don't fake things, Simon, she said. And I don't lie, and I don't pretend. You're a heartbreaker, Isabel Lightwood, he said, as lightly as he could with her blood still running through him like fire. Jace told Clary once you'd walk all over me in high-heeled boots. That was then. You're different now. She eyed him. You're not scared of me. He touched her face. And you're not scared of anything. I don't know. Her hair fell forward. Maybe you'll break my heart. Before he could say anything, she kissed him, and he wondered if she could taste her own blood. Now shut up. I want to sleep, she said, and she curled up against his side and closed her eyes. Somehow, now they fit, where they hadn't before. Nothing was awkward, or poking into him, or banging against his leg. It didn't feel like childhood and sunlight and gentleness. It felt strange and heated and exciting and powerful and different. Simon lay awake, his eyes on the ceiling, his hand stroking Isabel's silky black hair absently. He felt like he'd been caught up in a tornado and deposited somewhere very far away, where nothing was familiar. Eventually, he turned his head and kissed Izzy, very lightly, on the forehead. She stirred and murmured, but didn't open her eyes. When Clary woke in the morning, Jace was still asleep, curled on his side, his arm outstretched just enough to touch her shoulder. She kissed his cheek and got to her feet. She was about to pad into the bathroom to take a shower when she was overcome by curiosity. She went quietly to the bedroom door and peered out. The blood on the hallway wall was gone, the plaster unmarked. It was so clean, she wondered if the whole thing had been a dream. The blood, the conversation in the kitchen with Sebastian, all of it. She took a step across the corridor, placed her hand against the wall where the bloody handprint had been. "Good morning." She whirled. It was her brother. He had come out of his room soundlessly and was standing in the middle of the hall, regarding her with a crooked smile. He looked freshly showered, damp. His fair hair was the color of silver, almost metallic. "You planning to wear that all the time?" he asked, eyeing her nightgown. "No, I was just..." She didn't want to say she'd been checking to see if there was still blood in the hall. He just looked at her, amused and superior. Clary backed away. "I'm going to get dressed." He said something after her, but she didn't pause to hear what it was, just darted back into Jace's bedroom and closed the door behind her. A moment later, she heard voices in the hallway. Sebastian's again, and a girl's, speaking musical Italian. The girl from last night, she thought. The one he'd said was asleep in his room. It was only then that she realized how much she'd suspected he was lying. But he'd been telling the truth. "I'm giving you a chance," he'd said. "Can you give me a chance?" Could she? This was Sebastian they were talking about. She mulled it over feverishly while she showered and dressed carefully. The clothes in the wardrobe, having been selected for Jocelyn, were so far from her usual style that it was hard to choose what to wear. She found a pair of jeans, designer, from the price tag still attached, and a dotted silk shirt with a bow at the neck that had a vintage feel she liked. She threw her own velvet jacket on over it and headed back to Jace's room. But he was gone. And it wasn't hard to guess where. The rattle of dishes, the sound of laughter, and the smell of cooking floated up from downstairs. She took the glass stairs two at a time, but paused on the bottom step, looking into the kitchen. Sebastian was leaning against the refrigerator, arms crossed, and Jace was making something in a pan that involved onions and eggs. He was barefoot, his hair messy, his shirt buttoned haphazardly, and the sight of him made her heart turn over. She had never seen him like this, first thing in the morning, still with that warm golden aura of sleep clinging to him. And she felt a piercing sadness that all these firsts were happening with a Jace who wasn't really her Jace. Even if he did look happy, eyes shadow-free, laughing as he flipped the eggs in the pan and slid an omelet onto a plate. Sebastian said something to him, and Jace looked over at Clary and smiled.
Scrambled or fried?
Scrambled. I didn't know you could make eggs. She came down from the steps and over to the kitchen counter. Sun was streaming through the windows. Despite the lack of clocks in the house, she guessed it was late morning, and the kitchen glittered in glass and chrome.
Who can't make eggs? Jace wondered aloud.
Clary raised her hand, and at the same time so did Sebastian. She couldn't help a little jerk of surprise and put her arm down hastily, but not before Sebastian had seen and grinned. It was always grinning. She wished she could slap it off his face. She looked away from him and busied herself putting together a breakfast plate from what was on the table. Bread, fresh butter, jam, and sliced bacon, the chewy round kind. There was juice, too, and tea. They ate pretty well here, she thought. Although, if Simon was anything to go by, teenage boys were always hungry. She glanced toward the window and did a double take. The view was no longer of a canal, but of a hill rising in the distance, topped by a castle.
"Where are we now?" she asked.
"Prague," said Sebastian. "Jason and I have an errand to do here." He glanced out the window. "We should probably get going soon, in fact." She smiled sweetly at him. "Can I come with you?" Sebastian shook his head. "No."
"Why not?"
Clary crossed her arms over her chest. "Is this some manly bonding thing I can't be a part of? Are you getting matching haircuts?" Jace handed her a plate with scrambled eggs on it, but he was looking at Sebastian.
"Maybe she could come," he said.
"I mean, this particular errand, it's not dangerous." Sebastian's eyes were like the woods in the Frost poem, dark and deep. They gave nothing away. Anything can turn dangerous.
"Well, it's your decision," Jace shrugged, reached for a strawberry, popped it into his mouth, and sucked the juice off his fingers.
Now that, Clary thought, was a clear and absolute difference between this Jace and hers. Her Jace had a ferocious and all-consuming curiosity about everything. He would never shrug and go along with someone else's plan. He was like the ocean, ceaselessly throwing itself against a rocky shore. And this Jace was a calm river shining in the sun.
"Because he's happy?"
Clary's hand tensed on her fork, her knuckles whitening. She hated that little voice in her head. Like the Seelie Queen, it planted doubts where there shouldn't be doubts, asked questions that had no answer. "I'm going to get my stuff." After grabbing another berry off the plate, Jace popped it into his mouth and shot upstairs. Clary craned her head up. The clear glass step seemed invisible, making it look like he was flying upward, not running.
"You're not eating your eggs."
It was Sebastian. He'd come around the counter, still noiselessly, damn it, and was looking at her, his eyebrows raised.
"I don't actually like eggs," she confessed.
"But you didn't want to tell Jace that, because he seemed so pleased to be making you breakfast." Since this was accurate, Clary said nothing.
"Funny, isn't it?" said Sebastian. "The lies good people tell. He'll probably make you eggs every day for the rest of your life now, and you'll choke them down because you can't tell him you don't like them."
Clary thought of the Seelie Queen. "Love makes liars of us all."
"Exactly. Quick study, aren't you?"
He took a step toward her, and an anxious tingle seared her nerves. He was wearing the same cologne Jace wore. She recognized the citrusy black pepper scent, but on him it smelled different. Wrong, somehow.
"We have that in common," Sebastian said, and began to unbutton his shirt. She stood up hastily. What are you doing?
Easy there, little sis.
He popped the last button, and his shirt hung open. He smiled lazily. You're the magical rune girl, aren't you? Clary nodded slowly.
I want a strength rune, he said. And if you're the best, I want it from you.
You wouldn't deny your big brother a rune, would you? His dark eyes raked her.
Besides, you want me to give you a chance.
And you want me to give you a chance, she said. So I'll make you a deal. I'll give you a strength rune if you let me come with you on your errand.
He stripped the shirt the rest of the way off and dropped it onto the counter.
Deal.
I don't have a steely.
She didn't want to look at him, but it was hard not to. He seemed to be deliberately invading her personal space. His body was much like Jace's, hard, without any extra ounce of flesh anywhere, the muscles showing clearly under the skin. He was scarred like Jace, too, though he was so pale that the white marks stood out less than they did against Jace's gold skin. On her brother, they were like silver pin on white paper. He drew a steely from his belt and handed it to her.
Use mine.
All right, she said. Turn around. He did, and she swallowed back a gasp. His bare back was striped with ragged scars, one after the other, too even to be random accident. Whip marks.
Who did this to you? She said.
Who do you think?
Our father, he said.
He used a whip made of demon metal, so no Irazi could heal them. They're meant to remind me.
Remind you of what?
Of the perils of obedience.
She touched one.
It felt hot under her fingertips, as if newly made and rough, where the skin around it was smooth.
Don't you mean disobedience?
I mean what I said.
Do they hurt?
All the time. Impatiently, he glanced back over his shoulder.
What are you waiting for?
Nothing. She set the tip of the steely to his shoulder blade, trying to keep her hand steady. Part of her mind raced, thinking how easy it would be to mark him with something that would damage him, sicken him, twist his insides. But what would happen to Jace if she did? Shaking her hair out of her face, she carefully drew the Fortis rune at the juncture of his shoulder blade and back, just where, if he were an angel, he would have wings. When she was done, he turned and took the steely from her, then shrugged his shirt back on. She didn't expect a thank you, and didn't get one. He rolled his shoulders back as he buttoned the shirt and grinned.
You are good, he said, but that was all.
A moment later, the steps rattled, and Jace returned, shrugging on a suede jacket. He had clipped on his weapons belt, too, and wore fingerless dark gloves. Clary smiled at him, with a warmth she didn't feel.
Sebastian says I can come with you.
Jace raised his eyebrows.
Matching haircuts for everyone?
I hope not, said Sebastian. I look terrible with curls. Clary glanced down at herself. Do I need to change into gear?
Not really. This isn't the sort of errand where we're expecting to have a fight. But it's good to be prepared.
I'll get you something from the weapons room, said Sebastian, and vanished upstairs. Clary cursed herself silently for not having found the weapons room while she was searching. Surely it had something inside that could provide some sort of clue as to what they were planning. Jace touched the side of her face, and she jumped. She'd nearly forgotten he was there.
You sure you want to do this?
Absolutely. I'm going stir-crazy in the house. Besides, you taught me to fight. I figure you'd want me to use it. His lips quirked into a devilish grin. He brushed her hair back and murmured something into her ear about using what she'd learned from him. He leaned away as Sebastian joined them, his own jacket on and a weapons belt in his hand. There was a dagger thrust through it, and a serif blade. He reached out to draw Clary close to him and pulled the belt around her waist, double-looping it and settling it low on her hips. She was too surprised to push him away, and he was done before she had the chance. Turning away, he moved toward the wall, where the outline of a doorway had appeared, shimmering like a doorway in a dream. They stepped through it. A soft knock on the library door made Maris raise her head. It was a cloudy day, dim outside the library windows, and the green-shaded lamps cast small pools of light in the circular room. She couldn't say how long she'd been sitting behind the desk. Empty coffee mugs littered the surface in front of her. She rose to her feet. "Come in." There was a soft click as the door opened, but no sound of footsteps. A moment later, a parchment-robed figure glided into the room, his hood raised, shadowing his face.
"You called on us, Maris Lightwood?"
Maris rolled her shoulders back. She felt cramped and tired and old. "Brother Zachariah, I was expecting... well, it doesn't matter."
"Brother Enoch? He is senior to me. But I thought perhaps that your call might have something to do with the disappearance of your adoptive son. I have a particular interest in his well-being."
She looked at him curiously. Most Silent Brothers didn't editorialize or speak of their personal feelings, if they had any. Smoothing her tangled hair back, she stepped out from behind the desk.
"Very well. I want to show you something."
She had never really gotten used to the Silent Brothers, to the soundless way they moved, as if their feet didn't touch the ground. Zachariah seemed to hover beside her as she led him across the library to a map of the world tacked to the north wall. It was a Shadowhunter map. It showed Idris in the center of Europe and the ward around it as a border of gold. On a shelf below the map were two objects. One was a shard of glass crusted with dry blood. The other was a worn leather cuff bracelet, decorated with the rune for angelic power.
"These are Jace Herendel's cuff and Jonathan Morgenstern's blood. I understood attempts to track them were unsuccessful."
"It isn't tracking, precisely." Maris straightened her shoulders. "When I was in the circle, there was a mechanism Valentine used by which he could locate us all. Unless we were in certain protected places, he knew where we were at all times. I thought there was a chance he might have done the same to Jace when he was a child. He never seemed to have trouble finding him."
"What kind of mechanism do you speak of?"
"A mark. Not one from the Grey Book. We all had it. I had nearly forgotten about it. After all, there was no way to get rid of it."
"If Jace had it, would he not know of it and take steps to prevent you using it to find him?"
Maris shook her head. "It could be as small as a tiny, almost invisible white mark under his hair, as mine is. He would not have known he had it. Valentine wouldn't have wanted to tell him." Brother Zachariah moved apart from her, examining the map.
"And what has been the result of your experiment?"
"Jace has it," Maris said, but she did not sound pleased or triumphant. "I've seen him on the map. When he appears, the map flares, like a spark of light in the location where he is, and his cuff flares at the same time. So I know it is him, and not Jonathan Morgenstern. Jonathan never appears on the map."
"And where is he? Where is Jace?"
"I've seen him appear, just for a few seconds each time, in London, Rome, in Shanghai. Just a little while ago he flickered into existence in Venice, and then vanished again."
"How is he traveling so quickly between cities?"
"By portal?" She shrugged. "I don't know. I just know that every time the map flickers, I know he's alive. For now. And it's like I can breathe again, just for a little while." She shut her mouth decidedly, lest the other words come pouring out. How she missed Alec and Isabel, but could not bear to call them back to the Institute,
where Alec at least would be expected to take responsibility in the manhunt for his own brother. How she still thought of Max every day, and it was like someone had emptied her lungs of air, and she would catch at her heart, afraid she was dying. She could not lose Jace, too.
I can understand that.
Brother Zachariah folded his hands in front of him. His hands looked young, not gnarled or bent, his fingers slender. Maris often wondered how the brothers aged and how long they lived, but that information was secret to their order.
There's little more powerful than the love of family. But what I do not know is why you choose to show this to me.
Maris took a shuddering breath. I know I should show it to the Clave, she said. But the Clave knows of his bond with Jonathan now. They are hunting them both. They will kill Jace if they find him. And yet to keep it to myself is surely treason. She hung her head. I decided that telling you, the brothers, was something I could bear. Then it is your choice whether to show it to the Clave. I can't stand that it be mine. Zachariah was silent a long moment. Then his voice, gentle in her head, said,
Your map tells you that your son is still alive. If you give it to the Clave, I do not think it will help them much, besides telling them that he is traveling fast and is impossible to track. They know that already. You keep the map. I will not speak of it for now.
Maris looked at him in astonishment. But you are a servant of the Clave.
I was once a shadow hunter like you. I lived like you do. And like you, there were those I loved enough to put their welfare before anything else, any oath, any debt.
Did you? Maris hesitated. Did you ever have children?
No. No children.
I'm sorry.
Do not be, and try not to let fear for Jace devour you. He is a Herondale, and they are survivors.
Something snapped inside Maris. He is not a Herondale. He is a Lightwood. Jace Lightwood. He's my son. There was a long pause. Then,
I did not mean to imply otherwise,
said Brother Zachariah. He unclasped his thin hands and stepped back.
There is one thing you must be aware of. If Jace appears on the map for more than a few seconds at a time, you will have to tell the Clave. You should brace yourself for the possibility.
I don't think I can, she said. They'll send hunters after him, set a trap for him. He's just a boy.
He was never just a boy,
said Zachariah, and he turned to glide from the room. Maris did not watch him go. She had returned to staring at the map.
Simon?
Relief opened like a flower in his chest. Clary's voice, tentative but familiar, filled his head. He looked sideways. Isabel was still sleeping. Midday light was visible around the edges of the curtains.
Are you awake?
He rolled onto his back, stared up at the ceiling.
Of course I'm awake. Well, I wasn't sure. You're what, 6, 7 hours behind where I am? It's twilight here.
Italy?
We're in Prague now. It's pretty. There's a big river and a lot of buildings with spires. Looks a little like Idris from a distance. It's cold here, though. Colder than at home.
Okay, enough with the weather report. Are you safe? Where are Sebastian and Jace?
They're with me.
I wandered off a little, though. I said I wanted to commune with the view from the bridge. So I'm the view from the bridge? She laughed, or at least he felt something that was like laughter in his head. A soft, nervous laughter.
I can't take too long, though they don't really seem to suspect anything. Jace definitely doesn't. Sebastian is harder to read. I don't think he trusts me.
I searched his room yesterday, but there's nothing. I mean, nothing to indicate what they're planning. Last night? Nothing. It was odd how she could be inside his head, and he could still sense that she was hiding something. Sebastian has in his room the box my mom used to own, with his baby stuff in it. I can't figure out why. Don't waste your time trying to figure out Sebastian, Simon told her. He's not worth it. Figure out what they're going to do. I'm trying, she sounded irritable. Are you still at Magnus's? Yeah. We moved to phase two of our plan. Oh, yeah? What was phase one? Phase one was sitting around the table ordering pizza and arguing. What's phase two? Sitting around the table drinking coffee and arguing? Not exactly. Simon took a deep breath. We raised the demon Azazel. Azazel? Her mental voice spiked upward. Simon almost clutched at his ears. So that's what the stupid Smurf question was about. Tell me you're kidding. I'm not. It's a long story. He filled her in as best he could, watching Isabel breathe as he did, watching the light outside the window grow brighter. We thought he could help us find a weapon that can hurt Sebastian without hurting Jace. Yeah, but demon raising? Clary didn't sound convinced. And Azazel is no ordinary demon. I'm the one with Team Evil over here. You're Team Good. Keep it in mind. You know nothing's that simple, Clary. It was as if he could feel her sigh, a breath of air that passed over his skin, raising the hairs on the back of his neck. I know. Cities and rivers, Clary thought, as she took her fingers from the gold ring on her right hand and turned away from the view of the Charles Bridge back to Jace and Sebastian. They were on the other side of the old stone bridge, pointing off at something she couldn't see. The water below was the color of metal, sliding soundlessly around the bridge's ancient struts. The sky was the same color, pocked with black clouds. The wind whipped at her hair and coat as she walked over to join Sebastian and Jace. They all set off again, the two boys conversing softly. She could have joined the conversation if she wanted to, she supposed, but there was something about the still loveliness of the city, its spires rising into the mist in the distance, that made her want to be quiet, to look, and to think on her own. The bridge emptied out into a twisting cobblestone street lined with tourist shops, shops selling blood-red garnets and big chunks of golden Polish amber, heavy Bohemian glass, and wooden toys. Even at this hour, touts stood outside nightclubs, holding free passes or cards that would give you discounts on drinks. Sebastian gestured them aside impatiently, snapping his annoyance in check. The press of people was relieved when the street widened into an old medieval square. Despite the cold weather, it was filled with milling pedestrians and kiosks were selling sausages and hot spiced cider. The three of them stopped for food and ate around a tall rickety table while the huge astronomical clock in the square's center began to chime the hour. Clanking machinery started up, and a circle of dancing wooden figures appeared from doors on either side of the clock. The 12 apostles, Sebastian explained, as the figures whirled around and around. There's a legend, he said, leaning forward with his hands cupped around a mug of hot cider, that the king had the eyes of the clockmaker put out after this clock was finished, so he could never build anything as beautiful again. Clary shuddered and moved a little closer to Jace. He had been quiet since they'd left the bridge, as if lost in thought. People, girls mainly, stopped to look at him as they passed, his hair bright and startling among the winter dark colors of the old square. That's sadistic, she said. Sebastian ran his finger around the rim of his mug and licked the cider off. The past is another country. Foreign country, said Jace. Sebastian looked at him with lazy eyes. What? The past is a foreign country,
They do things differently there, Jace said. That's the whole quote. Sebastian shrugged and pushed his mug away. You got a euro for returning them to the stand where you bought the cider. But Clary suspected Sebastian couldn't be bothered to fake good citizenship for a measly euro. Let's go. Clary wasn't finished with her cider, but she set it down anyway and followed as Sebastian led them away from the square among a maze of narrow, twisting streets. Jace had corrected Sebastian, she thought. Certainly it had been over something minor, but wasn't Lilith's blood magic supposed to bind him to her brother in such a way that he thought everything Sebastian did was right? Could this be a sign, even a tiny sign, that the spell that connected them was starting to fade? It was stupid to hope, she knew, but sometimes hope was all you had. The streets grew narrower, darker. The clouds overhead had completely blocked out the lowering sun, and old-fashioned gas lamps burned here and there, illuminating the misty dimness. The streets had turned to cobblestones, and the sidewalks were narrowing, forcing them to walk in a line, as if they were picking their way across a narrow bridge. Only the sight of other pedestrians appearing and disappearing out of the fog made Clary feel that she had not stepped through some sort of warp in time into a dream city out of her own imagination. Finally, they reached an archway of stone that opened out into a small square. Most of the stores had turned off their lights, though across from them, one was lit up. It said Antique Variet in gold letters, and the window was full of old display bottles of different substances, their peeling labels marked in Latin. Clary was surprised when Sebastian headed toward it. What use could they possibly have for old bottles? She dismissed the thought when they stepped over the threshold. The store inside was dimly lit and smelled of mothballs, but it was stuffed, every cranny, with an incredible selection of junk, and not junk. Beautiful celestial maps warred for space with salt and pepper shakers shaped like the figures from the clock in the old town square. There were heaps of old tobacco and cigar tins, stamps mounted in glass, old cameras of East German and Russian design, a gorgeous cut glass bowl in a deep emerald shade sitting side by side with a stack of water-stained old calendars. An antique Czech flag hung from a mounting pole overhead. Sebastian moved forward through the stacks toward a counter in the back of the store, and Clary realized that what she had taken for a mannequin was in fact an old man, with a face as creased and wrinkled as an old bedsheet, leaning back against the counter with his arms crossed. The counter itself was glass-fronted and held heaps of vintage jewelry and sparkling glass beads, small chain purses with gem clasps, and rows of cufflinks. Sebastian said something in Czech, and the man nodded and indicated Clary and Jace with a jerk of his chin and a suspicious look. His eyes were, Clary saw, a dark red color. She narrowed her own eyes, concentrating hard, and began to strip the glamour from him. It wasn't easy. It seemed to stick to him like flypaper. In the end, she managed to pull it away only enough to see in flashes the real creature standing in front of her. Tall and human-shaped, with gray skin and ruby-red eyes, a mouth full of pointed teeth that jutted every which way, and long, serpentine arms that ended in heads like an eel's. Narrow, evil-looking, and toothy. "A Vetus demon," Jace muttered in her ear. "They're like dragons. They like to stockpile sparkly things. Junk, jewels, it's all the same to them." Sebastian was looking back over his shoulder at Jason Clary. "They're my brother and sister," he said after a moment. "They are entirely to be trusted, Nerik." A faint shudder ran under Clary's skin. She didn't like the idea of posing as Jace's sister, even for a demon's benefit.
"I don't like this," the Vetus demon said. "You said we would be dealing only with you, Morgenstern, and while I know Valentine had a daughter..." His head dipped toward Clary. I also know we had only one son.
He's adopted, said Sebastian breezily, gesturing toward Jace.
Adopted?
I think you'll find the definition of the modern family is really changing at an impressive pace these days, said Jace. The demon, Mirik, didn't look impressed.
I don't like this, he said again.
But you'll like this, said Sebastian, taking a pouch tied at the top from his pocket. He turned it upside down above the counter, and a clattering pile of bronze coins fell out, clinking together as they rolled across the glass. Pennies from dead men's eyes, 100 of them. Now, do you have what we agreed on? One toothed hand felt its way across the counter and bit gently at a coin. The demon's red eyes flickered over the pile.
That is all very well, but it is not enough to buy what you seek.
He gestured with an undulating arm, and above it appeared what looked to Clary like a hunk of rock crystal, only it was more luminous, more sheer, silvery, and beautiful. She realized with a jolt that it was the stuff seraph blades were made from.
Pure adamas, Mirik said. The stuff of heaven. Priceless.
Anger crackled across Sebastian's face like lightning, and for a moment, Clary saw the vicious boy underneath, the one who had laughed while Hodge lay dying. Then the look was gone. But we agreed on a price.
We also agreed you would come alone, said Mirik.
His red eyes returned to Clary and to Jace, who hadn't moved but whose aspect had taken on the controlled stillness of a crouching cat's.
I'll tell you what else you can give me, he said. A lock of your sister's pretty hair.
Fine, Clary said, stepping forward. You want a snip of my hair?
No.
Jace moved to block her. He's a dark magician, Clary. You have no idea what he could do with a lock of your hair or a bit of blood.
Mirik,
Sebastian said slowly, not looking at Clary. And in that moment, she wondered, if Sebastian wanted to trade a lock of her hair for the Adamas, what was to stop him? Jace had objected, but he was also compelled to do what Sebastian asked of him. In the crunch, what would win out? The compulsion, or Jace's feelings for her?
Absolutely not.
The demon blinked a slow, lizard-like blink.
Absolutely not.
You will not touch a hair on my sister's head, said Sebastian, nor will you renege on our bargain. No one cheats Valentine Morgenstern's son. The agreed-upon price, or...
Or what? Mirik snarled. Or I'll be sorry. You are not Valentine, little boy. Now, that was a man who inspired loyalty.
No, said Sebastian, sliding a seraph blade from the belt at his waist. I am not Valentine. I do not intend to deal with demons as Valentine did. If I cannot have your loyalty, I will have your fear. Know that I am more powerful than my father ever was, and if you do not deal fairly with me, I will take your life and have what I have come for. He raised the blade he held.
Duma, he whispered, and the blade shot forth, shimmering like a column of fire.
The demon recoiled, snapping several words in a muddy-sounding language. Jace's hand already had a dagger in it. He called out to Clary, but not fast enough. Something struck her hard on the shoulder, and she fell forward, sprawling on the cluttered floor. She flipped over onto her back, fast, looked up, and screamed. Looming over her was a massive snake, or at least it had a thick, scaled body and a head hooded like a cobra's. But its body was jointed, insectile, with a dozen skittering legs that ended in jagged claws. Clary fumbled for her weapons belt as the creature reared back, yellow venom dripping from its fangs, and struck. Simon had fallen back asleep after speaking with Clary. When he awoke again, the lights were on, and Isabel knelt on the edge of the bed, wearing jeans and a worn t-shirt she must have borrowed from Alec. It had holes in the sleeves, and the stitching around the hem was coming undone. She had the collar pulled away from her throat and was using the tip of a steely to trace a rune onto the skin of her chest, just below her collarbone. He raised himself up on his elbows.
"What are you doing?"
"Irazi," she said. "For this." She tucked her hair back behind her ear, and he saw the two puncture wounds he'd made in the side of her throat. As she finished the rune, they smoothed over, leaving only the faintest white flecks behind.
"Are you all right?"
His voice came out in a whisper, smooth. He was trying to bite back the other questions he wanted to ask.
"Did I hurt you? Do you think I'm a monster now? Have I creeped you out completely?"
"I'm fine. I slept a lot later than I normally ever do, but I think that's probably a good thing." Seeing his expression, Isabel slid her steely into her belt. She crawled toward Simon with a cat-like grace and positioned herself over him, her hair falling down around them. They were so close their noses touched. She looked at him unblinkingly.
"Why are you so crazy?" she said,
and he could feel her breath against his face, as soft as a whisper. He wanted to pull her down and kiss her, not bite her, just kiss her. But at that exact moment, the apartment door buzzer sounded. A second later, someone knocked on the bedroom door, banged on it really, making it shake on its hinges. "Simon! Isabel!" It was Magnus. "Look, I don't care if you're asleep or doing unspeakable things to each other. Get dressed and come out into the living room. Now." Simon locked gazes with Isabel, who looked as puzzled as he did. "What's going on?"
"Just get out here," Magnus said,
and the sound of his retreating feet was loud as he stalked away from their room. Isabel rolled off Simon, much to his disappointment, and sighed.
"What do you think it is?"
"No idea," said Simon. "Emergency meeting of Team Good, I guess." He'd found the phrase amusing when Clary had used it. Isabel, though, just shook her head and sighed.
"I'm not sure there is any such thing as Team Good these days," she said.
Chapter 13. The Bone Chandelier. As the serpent's head drove down toward Clary, a shining blur slashed across it, almost blinding her. A seraph blade, its shimmering knife edge slicing the demon's head cleanly off. The head crumpled, spraying venom and ichor. Clary rolled to one side, but some of the toxic substance splattered onto her torso. The demon vanished before its two halves could strike the floor. Clary bit down on her cry of pain and moved to get to her feet. A hand was suddenly thrust into her field of vision and offered to pull her to her feet.
"Jace," she thought.
But as she looked up, she realized she was staring at her brother.
"Come on," said Sebastian, his hand still out. "There are more of them."
She grabbed his hand and let him lift her to her feet. He was splattered with demon blood too, blackish-green stuff that burned where it touched, leaving scorched patches on his clothing. As she stared at him, one of the snake-headed things, elapid demons, she realized belatedly, remembering an illustration in a book, reared up behind him, its neck flattening out like a cobra's. Without thinking, Clary grabbed his shoulder and shoved him out of the way, hard. He staggered back as the demon struck, and Clary rose to meet it with the dagger she had yanked from her belt. She turned her body aside as she drove the dagger home, avoiding the creature's fangs. Its hiss turned to a gurgle as the blade sank in and she dragged it down, gutting the creature open the way someone might gut a fish. Burning demon blood exploded over her hand in a hot torrent. She screamed but kept her grip on the dagger as the elapid winked out of existence. She whirled around. Sebastian was fighting another of the illipids by the door of the shop. Jace was fending off two next to a display of antique ceramics. Shards of pottery littered the floor. Clarice swung her arm back and threw the dagger, as Jace had taught her to. It soared through the air and struck one of the creatures in the side, sending it jittering and squeaking away from Jace. Jace whirled around and, seeing her, winked before reaching up to scissor off the head of the remaining illipid demon. Its body collapsed as it vanished, and Jace, splattered in black blood, grinned. A surge of something went through Clary, a sense of buzzing elation. Both Jace and Isabel had spoken to her of the high of battle, but she'd never really experienced it before. Now she did. She felt all-powerful, her veins humming, strength uncoiling from the base of her spine. Everything seemed to have slowed down around her. She watched as the injured illipid demon spun and turned on her, racing toward her on its insectile feet, lips already curling back from its fangs. She stepped back, yanked the antique flag from its mounting place on the wall, and slammed the end of it into the illipid's open, gaping mouth. The pole punched out through the back of the creature's skull, and the illipid disappeared, taking the flag with it. Clary laughed out loud. Sebastian, who had just finished off another demon, swung around at the noise, and his eyes widened. "Clary, stop him!" he shouted, and she spun around to see Mirik, his hands fumbling at a door set into the back of the shop. She broke into a run, yanking the Seraph blade from the belt as she went. "Nakir!" she cried, vaulting up onto the counter, and she flung herself from the top of it as her weapon exploded into brightness. She landed on the Vetus demon, knocking him to the ground. One of his eel-like arms snapped at her, and she sliced it off with a sawing motion of her blade. More black blood sprayed. The demon looked at her with red, frightened eyes. "Stop!" he wheezed. "I could give you whatever you want." "I have everything I want," she whispered, and drove her Seraph blade down. It plunged into the demon's chest, and Mirik disappeared with a hollow cry. Clary thumped to her knees on the carpet. A moment later, two heads appeared over the side of the counter, staring down at her. One golden blonde and one silver blonde. Jace and Sebastian. Jace was wide-eyed. Sebastian looked pale. "Name of the angel, Clary," he breathed. "The Adamus." "Oh, that stuff you wanted? It's right here." It had rolled partly under the counter. Clary held it up now, a luminous chunk of silver, smeared where her bloody hands had touched it. Sebastian swore with relief and grabbed the Adamus out of her hand as Jace vaulted over the counter in a single movement and landed beside Clary. He knelt down and pulled her close, running his hands over her, his eyes dark with concern. She caught at his wrists. "I'm all right," she said. Her heart was pounding, her blood still singing in her veins. He opened his mouth to say something, but she leaned forward and put her hands on either side of his face, her nails digging in. "I feel good." She looked at him, rumpled and sweaty and bloody as he was, and wanted to kiss him. She wanted... "All right, you two," said Sebastian. Clary pulled away from Jace and glanced up at her brother. He was grinning down at them, lazily spinning the Adamus in one hand. "Tomorrow we use this," he said, nodding toward it. "But tonight, once we're cleaned up a little, we celebrate." Simon padded barefoot out into the living room, Isabel behind him, to find a surprising tableau. The circle and the pentagram in the center of the floor were shining with a bright silver light, like mercury. Smoke rose from the center of it, a tall black-red column tipped with white. The whole room smelled of burning. Magnus and Alex stood outside the circle, and with them, Jordan and Maya, who, given the coats and hats they were wearing, looked as if they had just arrived. "What's going on?" Isabel asked, stretching her long limbs with a yawn. "Why is everyone watching the pentagram channel?" "Just hang on a second," Alex said grimly.
You'll see. Isabel shrugged and added her gaze to the others. As everyone watched, the white smoke began to swirl, fast and then faster, a mini-tornado that tore across the center of the pentagram, leaving words behind it spelled out in scorch marks.